This series presents information based in part on theory and conjecture. The producer's purpose is to suggest some possible explanations, but not necessarily the only ones, to the mysteries we will examine.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, people from all over the place, parts unknown, wherever you're from, we're back better than ever after our little summer recess, and we are here. This is the Paranormal Pulse. I am your host, Lance Philp, and with me, as always, my beautiful co-host, Chris Bruno.
What an intro from you. Oh, my God.
It's that coffee before the show.
Is that good? How about that?
There you go. It's that coffee.
What's that?
It's the coffee right before the show.
Yeah. Well, I didn't do coffee. I did like 20-minute power nap, and it's kind of working.
There you go.
Anyway, hey, welcome back. We're having a great time tonight, and it was really nice to take a little break. We all kind of needed it, even though it wasn't planned originally. It worked out well for everybody. I hope you all enjoyed your vacations. I know we're still middle of August, and you might have some more vacations planned. But don't worry. We've always got archives online if you miss the show. Every other Monday night, 8 o'clock. I'm glad to be back. I'm tired, though. I have two things to point out, though, which are kind of cool. The first thing is, one, I don't have a fan or anything stupid, crazy, making all kinds of noise in the back. So that's nice. And two, I can't remember.
Well, this is a show dedicated to who?
Oh, that's right. That's what I wanted to say. See, I'm tired. This show is dedicated to, not you, Lance, to you, all of you. You Paranormal Pulse podcast fans, we are so excited to have you here with us every other week and to be listening to our archives and listening to our show and asking questions. We love it. Matter of fact, we have a lot of listener questions tonight because we've kind of neglected you guys a little bit in that respect, and we want to make it up to you. So we're going to go and address at least 6 questions by you guys, the listeners, tonight. So this show is dedicated to you. And if you have any questions about us, not just for Lance to answer or for me to answer, but also if you have a question about Lance personally, I know he'll open up and tell you. I'm an open book. You can ask me anything. That's just the way it is. So if you have questions for us or about us, feel free to post them on our Facebook page, or you can even post on the EKG site at our team, our paranormal investigative team, EKG, that's East Coast Ghost on Facebook. We'd love to hear from you. And tonight, we're going to answer your questions.
And then after that, we have a little segment about a very historical inn in Pennsylvania, where I happen to be friends with the owners. And I recently had the pleasure of meeting the former owner, and the inn is supposedly haunted, but only one party claims that.
Both parties, that's interesting.
Yes, both parties tell a very different tale. So
we'll have to get into that.
Absolutely, we'll get into that, and you know, I have some theories as to why, and we'll kick it around as to what you think, Chris, as to what could be the reasons before I tell you what I think, and then we'll go from there.
All right. Obviously, this entire show is pure opinion and speculation with some research involved because, you know, back it up with science.
Sorry. It's the rule of radio. If you have a microphone in front of you, you're an expert.
that's not true.
That's not my original thought. Opie and Anthony have been saying that for years, and I just agree with it. If you have a microphone in front of you, automatically makes you an expert. Think about it. Everybody you've seen on TV, they talk, they have a microphone, they're an expert.
Yeah, right? Okay. Anyway, you ever hear that phrase, face for radio? Because, you know, they're not so good-looking people. We're okay. I think we're okay. Anyway, we're going to get into listener questions. What?
But yeah, but remember, I'm usually behind the camera. So, you know.
This is true, Mr. Photographer. All right. So, anyway, we're going to get into the listener questions. And again, if you have any questions for us or about us, feel free to post them on our Paranormal Pulse podcast page. I'll be checking them periodically throughout the show, and we'll answer your questions. Okay, our first listener question, Paranormal Pulse podcast episode 17, for you listeners. Justin T. asks, I want to know about children and their ability to see and feel things we can't. Well, I have certain opinions about this, and I think Lance does as well. So I'm going to say, Lance, you go first because you have usually a pretty scientific approach to things. And that's a good point of view to put out here tonight.
Well, the one thing is, like, I have some experience with this, and I do have some strong theories on it that maybe they're not totally original to me, but they're theories that I stick with. And, you know, I've actually spoken about this at length with a couple of people before. And the big thing to me is that when you're an adult, you've gone through life, you become jaded, and you become very defensive. Your guard goes up. When you're a child, you're an open book. Kids are always curious. They always are looking to learn. They're always probing and asking questions. Why? And the thing is, since they are so open-minded and they haven't built up those that jadedness or those, you know, natural self-defenses as of yet, they're open to seeing things that we as adults block because our natural defenses say, you need to block this.
Oh, yeah, that's true. I agree with you. I think that we as a society raise our children to conform to, and I know I'm using all these words that people think I'm like conspiracy theory woman, but it's true. We raise our children to conform to society's ideas of what is correct and what is not correct. So when they get to a certain age, we start teaching them things. They say, hey, mommy, I saw this man, you know, in my window. It was grandpa, and they never met grandpa. And you go, no, that's just a dream. That's, you know, we rationalize it away so that our children are normal. The problem with that is that everybody has some sort of gift, whether they recognize it or not. And children are just, they're open to it all already. They don't have any preconceived notions. We're the ones who make them forget or brainwash them not to trust those instincts. So I agree with you in that respect, 100%.
Yeah. And, you know, and the thing is, I think it's important for parents out there who are into the paranormal, and I don't necessarily mean investigators, just people who are aware of the paranormal, when they have a child who comes to them and says, hey, I saw something. You know, I saw a man in my room. I saw a woman in my room, and they were talking to me. You know, it's very easy to dismiss it as, oh, he's got a vivid imagination. She's got a vivid imagination.
Right.
But there very well may be something there. And I bring to the forefront a case that a friend of mine had contacted me for a friend of hers. And basically, there was a situation where there was a 7-year-old girl and a 5-year-old mm-hmm. boy. And both of them had been claiming to see a man in their room, but they weren't claiming to see him at the same time, and they had separate rooms. They were claiming to see them one at a time. The interesting thing is the little girl was saying that the man was coming in and being abusive, not physically, but verbally to her.
Okay.
And was being very mean, calling her names, this, that, the other thing. The boy, on the other hand, was talking about how the man was coming in and being playful and fun and was entertaining, and of course the mother was dismissing it all, and
sure,
you know, and then what had happened was the mother started realizing that A, she would be in, say, the living room and hear the kids from the bedrooms and would hear them talking, you know, at different times to this person. And after a while, she started to think, there's a little bit more going on here than their imagination, because, you know, usually when kids make up a story like that, they'll forget about it after a while.
Mm-hmm.
But these kids were consistent. This was going on, I believe, for like 6 to 7 months. And the mother was starting to get worried. And she started talking to a friend of mine who happened to know I'm into the paranormal. And
right.
But the thing that really triggered the mother into being afraid was the fact that she'd put the kids in the car, in the car seats, and they would turn around and say, he's sitting next to you. Mommy, he's sitting next to you in the car. And the mother was freaking out. And,
sure, because she can't see it, nor can she accept the fact that that's possible.
Right. And now, unfortunately, they weren't local to this area. And my friend was basically giving the mother my information. We're going back and forth with emails and stuff. But I was able to get them hooked up with a group in their area that I know. And they were able to actually go and, first of all, calm the mother down and really talk to the mother to kind of explain what they knew about that type of situation.
Sure.
They were able to get in and talk to the little girl, talk to the boy, compare the notes, And then they were, you know, an investigation. They were really able to help the family kind of cope with it and explain to them what was going on. The thing was, even though the male figure was being abusive to the girl, it wasn't anything that was physically harmful to them. And what they did was they eventually did a cleansing, and they commanded whoever was there to leave, explaining to them that it wasn't their home, that they needed to leave, and that it wasn't welcome there. And from what I understand, the activity did die down.
Well, that's interesting. And there's a couple of approaches on that, too. But I think I don't want to get into too much into that because it'll distract from our question.
Right.
Which is, again, Justin T. wanted to know about children and their ability to see and feel things we can't. Now, you were just talking about an interesting story about one of your friends and the two children that she has and the different experiences each of those children had.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's also safe to say that anyone who is even remotely interested or even skeptical about the paranormal or psychic abilities, sensitivities, all of that, know somebody or experience something themselves that made that be something, that spark that they had something, some interest in it as well. If you think that your child may have abilities, there is a great article on Llewellyn, and that's at llewellyn.com, about 10 ways that abilities can emerge in a child. And, you know, they're just kind of indicators, questions to ask yourself about your child as to whether they are possibly sensitive or not. And what we're just talking about now is, does your child say he or she sees ghosts? That's one big piece right there. I've heard stories of people who had a child and they knew ancestors of theirs. If they had a deep knowledge of their ancestors, and you're not quite sure how, because you've never taught them, and those specific ancestors weren't around when this child was around. I mean, that's a big indicator right there. Does your child have an imaginary playmate or says he hears voices? Do they sometimes say that they've been to a place before, even though you know they never have? Kind of like a deja vu, which, I mean, I know a lot of people, including myself, that I've experienced that on a regular basis. Does your child get affected by crowds or noisy places? That is a good one, too. I know some children. I mean, it can be other things, too. But these are all just questions to ask yourself about your child to see if they are sensitive, possibly. It doesn't hurt to ask. Does your child understand the teachings of Jesus, Buddha, or any other holy ones? And you aren't sure where they got the information, but it seems to be incredibly accurate. Again, this is really an interesting topic. If you think your child is highly sensitive or gifted, it doesn't hurt to give a little test. You can find a lot of information about that subject online at llewellyn.com. No, we're not, you know, trying to get you on there to buy anything. Just they're a good resource. You can find other resources on our page through the Paranormal Pulse podcast page at Facebook, too. I think that was a great question.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we can really just kind of run with that question in all kinds of different directions. But we have some other questions, so we're gonna go to them.
On to the next.
These came off of our Paranormal Pulse podcast page just before our little siesta, and now we're addressing some of them. Some of them are from very recent, and some of them may be from tonight. If you go online to the Paranormal Pulse podcast at Facebook and post your questions for us or about us online. Okay, Linda M., spirit attachment to objects and why or what triggers activities to happen? Not really a question, but I guess just to talk about that subject in general, Linda M. wants to know about this. So what do you think about spirit attachment to specific objects? Do you believe that that is true? Do you believe that happens? And if so, why? And what can trigger the activity to happen around that object? Well, first, you have to believe that that's possible. Some people do believe that spirits do not attach to objects or locations necessarily, that they're free-flowing and can do whatever they want. Others think that that's not possible.
Well, you know,
what do you think, Lance? What do you think about this? Spirit attachment to objects. And then we'll address the why and what.
I believe it's possible, but I'm going to tell you exactly what I did. I read this question on our page, and I contacted the expert on this, John Zaffis.
Okay.
He happened to be on Facebook at the time when I was reading the question, and I direct messaged him on there, and he actually got back to me and answered it, and I have...
So what do you think, Linda M., your question is being answered actually by John Zaffis, not by Lance or myself. This is exciting. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Well, how does an item become haunted? This is the answer he has. With most items, they have been used in rituals, usually when spells are being cast. Although the items are not possessed, energy can be sent towards an object. Items can hold the energy within and around them, and it's usually the result of the energy being sent that to an object by an individual. So basically what he's saying is that, the way I'm understanding this, is that energy can be transformed, not necessarily into the object, but could be around the object, which is why it becomes haunted.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, as far as my opinion on it, I also feel that there are a lot of objects that have a strong connection to people. You know, the person's energy may gravitate towards that item almost as if they were holding it and their energy is surrounding it, you know? And
almost like a little field of energy around it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Now, to expand on that, I expanded it a little further, and it's how do you, you know, and the question was, how do you know when an object is haunted, or how do I know if I have a haunted object? And the answer that John has is, it can be concluded that a particular item is haunted if spiritual activity increases or begins altogether in a home after that item has been introduced onto the property. If you suspect that you have a haunted item, try removing it from the home for a few days and see if the activity decreases. If the activity decreases after the item is removed, then you probably have a haunted item. So basically, so it's basically, you know, if you had the activity, once you brought something into the home, and then all of a sudden you remove it and the activity stops, chances are it's from that item.
Now, it's funny, we were just discussing this, the little clutch of ladies I know. We touched on this subject a bit, and some people are very skeptical and think that that's just superstition, that's just you know, making it up or what have you. Although, on the other side of that, I know a lot of sensitive people, and this has been going on for years and years and years, even with psychics, they can do readings of your energy or what have you from a piece of jewelry or an item, or you can get a certain feeling or events can happen from a specific item. So that supports John's, you know, theory on the whole thing. And I think that happens more than people proving that it's superstition.
There's one more question, which, you know, we've talked about Ouija boards before and people burning them or destroying them. Well, but one thing they tell you is not to do that. And John Zaffis, one of the questions is, Why don't you burn or destroy an item instead of keeping it?
Right.
And, you know, this is actually about his haunted museum. And what he says, the question is often asked during museum tours. The reason that most items are not destroyed is because the action can hold severe repercussions. It can be dangerous for an individual to destroy an item used in spiritual practicing because the spirit attached to that item will often gravitate to the individual who destroys it.
Well, that's an interesting theory, and you're personifying that spirit, or you can just look at it in an energy point of view and say, okay, this is energy, good or bad, on this, around this item, and when you destroy that item, energy cannot be destroyed. It only transfers. It goes somewhere else. So that supports that theory. Where does that energy go? Well, it's going to go to wherever it's going to gravitate. Could be you. So, you know, even without personifying that spirit, just saying energy in general, it's got to go somewhere.
Right. Absolutely.
That's really interesting and nice theory. So I hope that answered your question, Linda M. You know, everybody's very own John Zaffis answering it for you. Spirit attachment to objects, why and what triggers activity? The next thing, it's not really a question, more of a subject matter. Billy Joe S., also from our Paranormal Pulse podcast page, had mentioned we should just go check out some haunted places in Seattle, Washington, like Suicide Bridge. Well, I took a look at Suicide Bridge and, of course, pulled up their Wikipedia first. And the Suicide Bridge is a bridge used frequently to die by suicide. What bridge isn't? And there's one in Seattle, Washington, as they said. And I'm not sure what the point of this place is. Maybe they just named it that because they have a lot of jumpers. I have to say, I have a friend who works on the GWB on a regular basis, and It happens a lot there too. So I don't know if it's necessarily just in Washington. I think it's any really big bridge that they have the opportunity to get on.
It's really not. I mean, you hear about it on the Brooklyn Bridge, but there's actually a documentary called The Bridge, which is about...
Isn't that about the Golden Gate Bridge?
Absolutely. Yes, it
is. I watched that. That is... It affects you,
yes,
watching that.
It absolutely does.
It's an excellent documentary, but it does affect you. I can't put it any other way. I mean, it affects you good and bad.
Mm-hmm. It's very eye-opening and very thought-provoking. So it's something,
absolutely.
If you get a chance to watch, I definitely recommend it. It's not for the squeamish, though.
No, because, here, let me just pull this up. What was the name of it again, the correct name?
The Bridge.
The Bridge, right?
Yep.
Okay, and the movie. And I'm going to go right to IMDb, so if you want to look it up yourself, that's where it is. Nope, that's not it. That's a horrible, horrible movie. Let me keep going. Let's try this one instead. I love this. Isn't this great? Let's see what's on the website. Ooh, there's music and very cool flash presentation in the beginning. Yeah, this is it. And it says, according to Stephen Holden of the New York Times, one of the most moving and brutally honest films about suicide ever made, remarkably free of religious cant and of cozy New Age bromides. It's eerie and indelible. It affects you, period. Look it up online, TheBridgeTheMovie.com. It's again, we're not getting any money for this. It's just a really good movie. But yeah, as Lance said, it's not for the squeamish. You do want to, it's not gory, but it does affect you. So a really good movie. Okay, moving on. It was a good question, a good suggestion too. Thank you, Billy Joe. All right, so we have some questions that we got from Paranormal Pulse listeners just the other day. The first one, I think, could be a fun question, is Lori K. And she says, this question is for either of us. What was the scariest thing that ever happened to you while conducting investigation? I think, Lance, you should start with that. I don't think I have anything incredibly scary. I'm kind of hard to scare. I think you are, too. What we do, walking around in the dark in strange places in the pitch black, it's hard to scare us.
Yeah.
That's all I have to say.
Two situations come up. One that you were there for when we did the private home poltergeist case,
right?
That really wasn't, but
yeah, we'll get into that in a little bit because I think that applies to our next question as well.
Yeah, if you remember, it was me, you, and Rick on investigating one area of the house, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden I felt like a hand push my chest and push me back, and it freaked me out, but not to where I was afraid. More, I was defiant. You were there. You remember? You heard me talk to it, and I basically said, "Okay, is that all you have? You know, you're not going to scare me. I'm not going to back down." But it was honestly, I mean, I said that, but in my head, I was like, what the hell was that? You know?
but you can't say that out loud and put that kind of thing out there. You want to control yourself a little bit and move forward.
And if you remember, I actually kind of went at it angrily because I was like, I was a little pissed off. Like, okay, you invaded my space now, you know?
Right.
And again, it really wasn't, we didn't find anything, you know, demonic there, or which some people said we would find.
No.
And even be honest, I don't really think it was a true poltergeist case. I do believe there was something there, but nothing dangerous.
We have our opinions. I mean, obviously, most of paranormal investigation is just trying to prove scientifically what our experiences are. And this was, no different. I think the initial thought was that it was a poltergeist or some sort of demonic thing. As soon as I got there, like I said, I have a little bit of sensitivity. Whatever. I'm not claiming to be a medium or anything like that. But hey, I can feel stuff. And no, I didn't get that at all. Matter of fact, after having a lengthy conversation with one of the homeowners, a resident there, I don't even think it could be chalked up to paranormal. Not saying that we didn't get activity, because we certainly did, but nothing evil. And definitely, I think that what she was experiencing in particular had nothing to do with the paranormal. But that's, again, my personal opinion. And that's something that is kind of important in our field, to debunk the paranormal with what, the actual realistic possibilities are. That's what we're all trying to do, is prove it scientifically that it's paranormal. You got to rule everything else out first before you can say it's paranormal. So I think we deemed that one not paranormal.
Well, the other thing was, at Burlington County Prison.
I
had separated from...
I wouldn't be scared there. Everybody should be scared there.
I will say, I had separated from the group at one point. The cell blocks are shaped like a U shape, and I was right in the middle, and I went to the far end, and I had to go around a corner, and something just, for some reason, there was a fear of dread in me of what was around that corner, but me being the camera guy, I kind of reached out with the camera and looked at the screen first before I turned the corner. So that was the only other real time where I can say I was honestly...
Yeah.
That one, and actually, that one I wasn't afraid because I just felt like a feeling of dread as soon as I got to that corner. And I was
you felt it.
Yeah, I didn't want to turn around that corner so quickly, you know. Where in retrospect, I probably should have because something probably would have been there that, you know, was in my face and would have been like, I would have had that oh shit moment that Rick always talks about.
Yeah. Yep. It's funny too because when you're in those circumstances on a regular basis, like we put ourselves into, you tend to like desensitize yourself to things that could startle you, you know, so you don't get scared so to speak so easily. But there are certain things when you start feeling that you have to trust your instincts. Sometimes things come over you, like you said, you had that overwhelming feeling of dread. You can't make that happen. It's just a feeling, you know, you had, and you have to recognize it because, I mean, let's face it, we are used to walking around in the dark. So when you feel something like that, it doesn't happen on a normal basis. You have to pay attention to it. For me, I would say that the experiences I've had weren't necessarily scary, but exciting. Like, wow, that was really cool. I can't believe we just got that, you know, that kind of thing. I could say the closest thing to possibly being scary was when we did the investigation up at the Shanley in the Napanock, New York. Uncle Sal. Sal's great host. Really cool place. He's working hard to get that place restored so it's safe for everybody to walk around. But it's got a lot of activity. It's a very cool place. And they had a bordello. Tiny little room set off of the kitchen bar area. You go up the steps and kind of go in your waiting area while you're waiting for your room. And we were sitting in the main room. And what I thought was really interesting, and I had not experienced before throughout my entire life of investigations, was I felt something touch me. And when your space is invaded, you're like, whoa, what the heck? What was better about this was it wasn't just that I felt it, but one of our team members, Virgil, saw it. And we did catch an orb on camera, and it also moved a curtain afterward in its path. All of which I did not see, but I felt it graze across my arm. And then Verge was like, immediately looked at me and went, did you feel that? Like, right. Yeah, I did. Did you see that? So it wasn't scary. It was just very cool to be able to catch it and validate it with other people.
And what's weird about that is if you remember, we started the night as one group, you were in a group with me, and then somehow, I guess Rick and myself wound up in another group, and then you wound up in another group, and I totally missed that. I wasn't there for that.
Weren't there. And then you, sadly, you missed out on the whole session with Rosie out by the well.
Right, I had left.
Which was a shame, because that was really impressive.
Yep, I had left at that point.
Yeah, so it was unfortunate you weren't there, but it was a very cool, session. But yeah, so for me, not scary necessarily, but really kind of exciting, cool to be able to feel that myself, not be able to say, okay, that was just a breeze, and have other people see it and validate it for me. That was very, very cool.
Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, that's okay. That's my complete thought now.
What I was going to say is before we move on to the next question, let's take a little break.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
And we'll come right back.
All right, cool.
Are you a god?
Hello, kiddies. This is Alice Cooper.
Hi, Ruffles. This is Billy Idol.
Hey, this is Meatloaf.
Hey, this is Steven Tyler from Aerosmith.
I am Vince Clortho, Key Master of Gozer, Vulgus Zildrawer, Lord of the Sebulia. Are you the gatekeeper?
Hey, this is Grant Wilson of Those Thunders, and you're listening to the Paranormal Pulse.
This is the Paranormal.
3, 2, 1.
And we're recording?
Yep.
Hey, welcome back to the Paranormal Pulse podcast. I'm Chris Bruno. We've got my co-host, Lance Phillip, with us. And we're talking about, well, it's episode 17. And this episode is dedicated to you. to the Paranormal Pulse podcast listeners. So we're concentrating on quite a few listener questions tonight. And our last question that we just wrapped up on before the break was a question for either one of us talking about the scariest thing that ever happened to us while we were conducting an investigation. And Lance talked about a couple of places he went. I talked about the Shanley and going there. But our next question goes right back to the first example. And this question is from Justin T. He says, I like Lori's question. That's the question we just talked about. I would also like to know, can animals become ghosts or apparitions? Now, as an example of this, and I believe yes, that first investigation that Lance was talking about, the private residence where there was a supposed poltergeist or demon, we did not experience that, but we did experience a lot of paranormal activity. Nothing crazy, but, you know, certain things did definitely happen. There was a certain area that we sat in the living room, and basically I sat on the couch. I think, Lance, you were sitting next to me, weren't you?
Yes, I was on the other end of it, yep.
Yep. And Rick was at another chair sitting across from us. And I kept on getting this feeling from the corner behind us, behind the couch, which was an area you could walk into. There was like a break front kind of buffet type piece of furniture. And we were sitting on the couch and I kept feeling like, and I'm a pet owner. I've had pets in my entire life. Kept feeling like something, much like a cat, ran across my leg. Now, that's an unmistakable feeling. No claws, of course, but that's unmistakable, especially if you've ever had a pet or visited someone's house that had a pet. Now, mind you, this residence did have cats running around, but there weren't any cats near us. And I kept feeling like there was a cat on the couch back behind me, like walking along the couch edge. And then at one point felt like it ran down across my legs and to the floor. Like cats do. After all was said and done, and I didn't really say too much about it. I did mention it to Lance and Rick when we were sitting there, but nothing else, you know. I spoke to the owner and I asked her what was over on that break front. And funny enough, the ashes of her beloved cat were were in a little urn on the break front that was behind us. So it was interesting to me to experience that. I do believe that animals can become ghosts or apparitions.
Well,
I know that a lot of sensitive people see them on a regular basis or smell them. That was another thing. I had an old apartment that used to be a very old farmhouse, and there was a distinct smell, although there had never been a dog there, or at least for a good 50 years. There was a distinct smell of wet dog and sightings of a golden retriever running around inside and outside of my apartment, which I thought was really, really interesting because there wasn't one there.
And
so I think yes.
Well, and the other thing too, if you remember that case, one of the claims that the owner had was being scratched in the night, almost like animal scratches.
Yeah, and that kind of supports what I think is possibly was happening in those complaints in particular, that it could very well be a ghost or apparition of a deceased pet. I know it can sound kind of corny, but we're all adults here. We all know that there are things that we just don't know about. And I really think that that was the case.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, I've talked about this before. I have firsthand experience right here in my apartment. We had a miniature pincer who passed away. Yeah, he was awesome. But he was getting very old, and unfortunately his heart was failing. Basically, they said there was nothing they can do for him. So he wound up passing away. Long story short is that almost immediately after him passing away, Jen would see him still in the house. And then I started to see him. But the weird thing is we would hear barking in the house, and at that point we didn't have another dog. We waited about 6 months before we got another dog. We would catch him out of the corner of our eye. He'd be turning the corner, sometimes just sitting there looking at us.
Mm-hmm.
And to this day, I mean, I've had my current dog, my little Jack Russell, for 5 years, and to this day, periodically, we still see him. I will say, once we got the new dog, we stopped seeing him as much, and stopped hearing the barking as much. But occasionally,
have you ever noticed that your new dog had any kind of reaction to something that you might have been hearing from the old dog or the possible apparition of the old dog?
Periodically, my dog and my cat will sit there and turn and just start staring, and there's nothing there that I can
right.
see. And I don't know if they're reacting to him maybe Or, you know, again, they're super sensitive for their hearing and their smell and everything else. I mean, they could be just be hearing something from the outside. It's hard to
say.
They're
probably like, you know, squirrel?
But well, and also, too, you know, we have the other activity with the entity that we call Betsy. And I don't know if, you know, if they're reacting to Betsy or to Dutchie, my old dog. You know, it's hard to say.
Right.
You know, just there's a lot of activity that goes on here. So it's kind of strange. You get used to it after a while. You know, you get used to things missing and then turning up again somewhere else. It happens a lot. Little things, but it happens, you know. But I definitely believe that you know, animals can come back. When you talk to real religious people, many of them tell you that, you know, dogs don't go to heaven or hell, sort of type of thing.
Right.
I've never bought into that. I've always bought into that their energy moves on as well. I'm not going to say heaven or hell, because I'm just talking about in terms of paranormal.
You're a scientific kind of guy, and if you're going to look at it in that respect without any kind of religious influence on it, energy's energy. It's got to go somewhere.
Absolutely. And I do believe they move on. I mean, you know, just like we do.
So that's a great question about animals becoming ghosts or apparitions. Could it happen? And I, you know, of course, these are all opinions of ours from our own personal experiences and our research and our investigations. But yeah, we believe that that is a possibility. And I believe that we've both experienced it at some point. And I bet you all of you guys have too. I think maybe in the future we should pick a specific topic and hear from you, the listener, as to what you've experienced. And we can comment on that as well. We've got one more listener question and then a couple topics that we can talk about that are very topical. Okay. The last listener question we have right now, and I am looking at our Paranormal Pulse podcast page. So if you have any questions or comments for us or about us, we're more than happy to answer them for you. Just plop it on our timeline and we'll read it. Rick G asks, do you think apparitions can be any size, like 10 feet tall or 2 feet tall? Or should they be the exact same size as their living self? And when he says apparition, he means full body apparition. What do you think about this, Lance? Can they be any size they choose, or is it the perspective of the people who are seeing it? I mean, what do you think?
I've never thought about this before, to be honest, and I really don't know. I don't know. It's not something I've given a lot of thought to. I will say that, you know, we have heard, like with Letchworth Asylum, basically that there's a report of a 10-foot man that walks around there. Now, okay, we've investigated there on three separate times, and we never saw it, but doesn't mean it's not there. I don't know. It's hard to say. I really don't know. I mean,
I'm going to get all philosophical on this one. Mm-hmm. I think that it has a lot to do with what our mind as human beings can, our capacity of understanding. And maybe, you know, our own understanding makes us see them as the size that they would be if they were their living self, rather than what they actually are.
Yeah, no, I tell you,
it's just a thought.
Yeah, no, I will say one thing. You know, that gives me just kind of put a thought in my head, which is, you know how sometimes when you talk music with someone who's in a different age bracket, or even someone who maybe lived in a different part of the country, and you may reference a band and say, oh man, I remember how big that band was. And then somebody else's recollection was, you know, they really weren't that big. And it's because people experience things differently.
Perspective.
Different time, perspective. And that's what it is. It's all perspective. How many times do you remember something from when you were a kid and you're like, man, it was huge.
I remember.
And then you get there.
Wendy's burgers used to be a lot bigger.
Well, no, just in general. Like, you just remember like the experience being this big thing. And then when you get there as an adult, you let down because it wasn't the way you remembered it. A lot has to do with the perspective and your mind frame when you see certain things, you know. It's very possible, especially, you know, if you see something for the first time, that you see it bigger than life, you know,
right,
but it may not actually be that way. So it's very difficult to say.
I think perspective is a huge part of this, as far as if you are witnessing a full body apparition or not, what size they should be. I think it also has to do just with common human capacity. We want to make sense of things. We need to categorize. We need to explain. We need to understand. And if we don't understand it, well, you know, then we have a breakdown, basically. So for us to be able to understand and comprehend what we're seeing, I think we just naturally kind of you know, pigeonhole it into the idea of, okay, that's a full body apparition of a man, because it should be 6'4", not 10 feet, not 2 feet. You know, if we saw a little tiny man, we would go, oh, that's a child apparition. That's not a man. Could have been a man.
Right.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
But to us, it makes sense to think that it's a child because of the height.
And also, too, how many times have you heard of two people being in the same room seeing some type of apparition, but seeing it totally differently?
Sure. And it's all perspective.
It's all perspective. This is an example that I've used when teaching newer people, you know, about ghost hunting. And I explain, you take a round mirror. That's a perfectly round mirror. You put it on the wall. The person standing directly in front of it is going to see it as perfectly round. Move to the right 3 or 4 feet, the person looking at it and then turning their body to look at it will see it more as an oval, because their perspective and their angle changes.
They'll also see different things in the mirror itself.
Exactly. Now
from
move,
that perspective.
Now move almost parallel with it against the wall, and you're going to see it basically almost as a narrow slit, as opposed to, you know, an oval or a circle. Or you're going to see it flat, because you're going to be seeing it from the side. Now you have a person who saw it three different ways just because of where they were standing. And it's the same thing. You can, you know, so again, that could
be the commonalities that you have to take in consideration in order to have somewhat accurate information, you know, of witnesses.
So it could be that something really isn't 10 feet tall, but people envision it that way. Or that it's not really 2 feet tall. You know, it's just perspective.
Yeah.
You know, so
it really is. We can shuffle it any way we want. Well, basically, it is. It's all about the perspective of the person that's witnessing this apparition, if you will. Rick G, great question. And I'm sure we could even go further with this one. Again, his question was, do you think apparitions can be any size, 10 feet tall, 2 feet tall, or should they be the exact same size as their living self? That was what we were just talking about. Really interesting.
Yeah.
And again, all about perspective.
And that does wrap up our listener questions for this episode, and we appreciate them.
Thank you. Thank you, Rick, Justin, Lori, Linda, Billy Joe. There's our listener roll call.
There you go.
and I wanted to do a little bit more of that, because just for a second or two, I wanted to recognize some of our new Paranormal Pulse podcast fans, because we still are getting likes on Facebook on a daily basis, and we so appreciate it. Make sure you share our page with your friends. Anybody who has interest in the paranormal, we're here, happy to cater to them. And I want to say hello to Crystal S., and Buffy K., Kelly Ann H., and Teresa R.L. Everybody's got these two double last names. I know it's the married women. But thank you and welcome to the Paranormal Pulse podcast page and being a fan of ours. You can hear the Pulse online at Facebook. And again, you can just Google us or Facebook us at Paranormal Pulse Podcast. You can listen to the podcast right from the Facebook page or from many other ways, including Blueberry, Podbean, our homepage. Podbean's got all kinds of great information. That's where we put all our links. That's our homepage for the podcast. Stitcher, Roku, and iTunes are just a few ways that you can listen to our podcast anytime you want.
And real quick, we just have one minor little announcement. The Paranormal Podcast is now a member of the International Association of Internet Broadcasters.
Woohoo!
So our show's
part of the Broadcasters Association. It's very exciting.
Absolutely. We were approved. It took a while, but we were approved. And I don't know what it means to anybody out there, but it's kind of cool.
You know what? It's a very young kind of venue, and someday it'll be a big deal. So we're just going to keep plugging along the way we do, because we enjoy it, and we are so happy that you guys enjoy it too. So what are we going to do next? I know you've got a couple of things to talk about.
Yeah, well, let's take another little break, and then we'll come back, and we will go into the haunted inn, or not so haunted.
Ooh, that's right. Okay, see you in a few.
Just relax. We are now checking your paranormal pulse.
Welcome back, everybody. I have a little interesting, what I think is an interesting subject. In Pennsylvania, there is a historic inn. The current owners claim that it's haunted, so much so that I had talked to them about doing an investigation there, but I was told we couldn't because a certain TV show was going there.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, and
it's always a TV show getting in our way.
Well, it's not that bad. What happened was they went in, they filmed, and they aired. But the agreement they signed with the inn was that no one could go in there for X amount of time. That's almost up. So
yay.
I'm talking to them again about getting in there. But the reality is, though, is I got to meet the former owner who owned it for 19 years. And I was talking to her. I basically came out and asked her, I said, what's your experience with the inn? Is it haunted? And she told me in 19 years of being there, she never had one paranormal episode.
Huh.
And it's not that she's a skeptic or anything like that. She believes in the paranormal because she's had experiences outside of there at a different location. But she said, right, to her knowledge, she never had any staff complain about it, never experienced it. And it made me wonder, were the new owners, now I know the new owners well and I trust them, but it made me wonder, were they making it up to get this place on TV to kind of promote it?
The new owners?
Yes. Or or were there other factors involved that brought an energy there? So, and I know a little bit more about the situation, which I'll talk about in a second, but what would you think, Chris?
Huh. Well, you know, I think with locations like that, there's so much history. It's such an old location that, of course, it's possible that it's got some sort of activity going on. Without any kind of reports back from staff and, you know, people who actually frequent the inn, it's hard to say.
Well, and that's the thing. There have been patrons who have reported seeing apparitions there. And the staff that's currently there has reported it. But ironically, the new owners haven't actually personally seen it. It's all been reports from patrons and staff.
But I have to ask, too, with the new owners, have they've never seen it. They're just getting these reports from patrons and staff.
Right.
Have they ever even spent time there long enough to experience anything?
Well, yeah, no, they're active owners, so they're there all the time.
Okay.
Yeah, no, they're definitely there all the time.
Sure. I think it's very interesting. I think that it's very possible that it could have paranormal activity. And on the other side of it, like you were saying, I think it's incredibly possible that people make stuff up just to get on TV.
It's hard to say, but it's tough,
but you have to gauge that by the type of people they are. Do you think they're the kind of people that would do that? And if there's a lot of people, a lot of staff and patrons who have no benefit of admitting that kind of experience to anyone, if there's no benefit for them, then why would they lie about it?
Well, and that's the whole thing. I don't know, but, you know, and
it'd be worth investigating. I'll tell you that much.
Yeah. And one of the things I should mention is that the family has had some tragedy around it.
Tragedy in the new owners?
Yes.
Prior
to owning it.
Okay.
Their dad had passed away and he was really a beloved figure.
Okay.
And I wonder if possibly his energy came in with them, almost like a guardian type of spirit, or to almost help them oversee, you know, taking over this new endeavor.
Right.
And, you know, I wonder, I don't know. I don't know enough about the activity that's gone on there. I keep hearing about it, but nobody seems to know or tell me about it in detail. Even when I talk to the owners about it, you know, they tell me about doors that open and close, noises they hear from the upstairs and things like that. But not enough of the detail of, like, okay, what did an apparition look like? You know, is it possible this could have happened? I just find it very interesting that you have two sets of owners, one fairly new to it. You know, they've had it for a few years now.
Mm-hmm.
And then one owner that had it for 19 years, totally different stories. And I just wonder if it's a matter of they brought the energy in there with them, or if it's totally possible that, you know, they're being misguided.
And, well, like I said before, with the new owners, the old owners don't report anything, correct?
Right,
I'm,
nothing.
I'm understanding I'm this right. That,
right.
The I'm old so- owners who owned it for 19 years had no experiences, but the new owners have experiences all the time, as well as patrons and employees. That kind of, just out of logical order of events, you would say they brought something with them.
Right, and the television show that went and filmed there did find activity.
But
what's weird about that is I know someone who was actually in the building having dinner at the time when they were recording, like, some of the B-roll footage.
Yeah.
And they were told right up front, you're going to be on TV. There's a possibility by sitting here, you'll be on TV. Apparently what they said was they were telling him, oh, there's activity here, activity there. But no one in the restaurant actually experienced what the show was claiming was going on.
Yeah. See, and that's why it's so hard with these shows too. I know that we know from talking to some of these guys that the show doesn't always turn out the way that it really happened because of production and all that type of thing. But as we discussed before, some of these guys, including business owners, will do whatever it takes to get attention. So you never know if it's legit or if it's produced for a purpose.
Right. And, you know, and you don't know about, is the family promoting it this way to generate more business for the place? Because, you know, some people will go there just to say, is there something behind me? I know I've gone to a few restaurants that I've been told were haunted just to kind of look around and see if I got a feeling when I was there.
Yeah.
Not that it reads into the paranormal, but there are some people. And
no, but you'll research the location and you'll find out, you know, that there was never any kind of residence or business or anything. It was just excavated land. They built this in 1987 and nothing bad has ever happened.
Right.
And you're like, okay, all right. Right. So tell me, what is it?
And this inn is very old. I mean, it's been
there
for
years.
Yeah,
this is a different story.
This, right.
This has got a lot of history behind it and potentially can have some sort of paranormal activity. But like you were saying, you had an owner there who was there for 19 years and experienced nada.
Right.
And then the other thing, new people coming in.
The other possibility is that when the new owners took over, they remodeled part of it.
So now you're talking about what we were discussing, that John Zaffis was talking about those items that may have had something attached to them, some energy around them, displacing them.
Right. And we also know that, you know, in many cases, it's believed that construction releases energy, you know, or disturbs the spirits who are calm and at peace with it. And all of a sudden, their surroundings have been changed. So now
that's speculation.
Right. Absolutely. But it's a theory that's been out there for years.
Right.
You know, you've read about it and it's out there. But there seems to be a good amount of activity that does take place when major changes are made to old homes. It's another theory that's, you know, that could be.
Yeah, absolutely. Any old place like that. I'd love to get in there. That'd be a great place to.
We're talking
about an inn in Pennsylvania. We're not naming names because of certain legalities and that type of thing. But I would love to get in there.
Right.
Tell me when the time frame is up and I'm in.
Yeah, like I said, I've been trying to break them down and wear them down. I know the family owns it, and I'm like, can we get in there yet, please? And they're like,
Use your powers
still
of charm.
You know,
come on, Lance.
I know.
You guys have any good locations in the tri-state area that are open for investigation?
We should clarify the tri-state area because there are a lot of tri-state areas around this country.
New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania, tri-state area. I forget.
Right, because you, remember,
we've
you
got
have
listeners across the board here.
Right, and don't forget we have the New York metro tri-state area, which is New York, New Jersey, Connecticut. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, specifically the New York, New Jersey, Pennsylvania tri-state. There's a lot of great places to investigate. Even if you just wanted to go as an amateur investigator, start at cemeteries during the day. You'd be amazed what you get.
Which will bring us to something that I'm going to talk about the next show, which is cemetery etiquette.
Yay!
The Paranormal Pulse. Like us on Facebook at East Coast Ghost. That's East Coast with a K, Ghost, on Facebook. And feel it for yourself.
So, so that's going to be exciting. I can't wait to talk about cemeteries. I know a lot about them. I know a lot of people who are very interested in the cemeteries and the history. I know someone in particular who's got a lot of history on some of our local cemeteries. But we'll get into that in the next episode of the Paranormal Pulse podcast. It will be episode 18, and that'll be coming up in a couple weeks. So I'm Chris Bruno, and I think we're done here for the evening. You want to send us a question, a comment, a subject, a location to investigate, anything you want to talk about at all, do it at our Facebook page at Paranormal Pulse Podcast online at Facebook. Lance, you want to say goodbye?
Absolutely. Thank you for tuning in, everybody. Again, it's been another fun show and can't wait to do the next one. And we appreciate you listening. And everybody, have a good night and stay safe until the next time we talk to you.
Little applause, everyone. I love it.
All right, cool.